think we're ready to begin again. So, Drew, I'd like to welcome you to the council and for the interview. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
We are in the process this week of interviewing 14 people, and we're very, very glad that you could be with us today. We will ask a series of questions, and you're not necessarily expected to know the answers to all of them, but it's nice if you do. To get us started, we invite you to make an opening statement, and we will go approximately 45 minutes. As we get towards the end, I will try to give you some indication that we're almost done and then invite you to make a closing statement at the end as well.
Okay.
So go ahead. Please speak into the microphone, and so that we make sure that we all can hear.
All right. As you may be aware, members of the RCAC, I'm currently an undergraduate student at the Twin Cities campus of the University of Minnesota. I went through what is known as a traditional path of attending a four-year college the fall following my graduation from high school. While the path I have taken has given me a great exposure to what is a common experience among colleges across the nation, college students across the nation, I have many other experiences and connections that tie me to other programs at the university. Due to my recent enrollment as an undergraduate, I've been able to personally go through the outstanding programs that have been put in place in the last decade or so that are focused on the undergraduate population, the success of which was highlighted in the 2011 report, Mission and Scope, A Vision for Enrollment Management at the University of Minnesota, and the successes which include a first-year retention rate of over 90% and a four-year graduation rate of over 50%. Through experiencing these programs firsthand, I'm now equipped with a valuable point of view on an aspect of education that the university has become very committed to. This point of view would be a valuable addition to the board, as it has not recently, if ever, had an undergraduate member serve. The experiences that have prepared me for a position on the board began even before my first experience as an enrolled student, however. Permit me to segue. A month after I turned 16, I was hired by a sandwich shop, Jimmy John's, actually. I see some of the wrappers around. A year after being hired, within a year, I was actually responsible for managerial work. This was counting deposits, analyzing controlling costs, as well as projecting profits. I took this business financial experience and applied it to my position as treasurer for the American Indian Student Cultural Center, which is one of over 100 multicultural student groups on the Twin Cities campus. I created and currently work to maintain a sizable, for a student group, budget of $30,000. While these examples pale in comparison to the complexity and size of the entire university system, I feel that I have a very solid foundation of varied experiences to use as a base for providing valuable contributions and insight to the board's actions. Another valuable experience that I am proud to take part in is a recent appointment to the search committee for the Vice Provost for Student Affairs and Dean of Students. The search committee's charge is to find quality candidates for a top-level administrative position in a rigorous national search. I highlight this position because I am one of only two undergraduate members to serve on the committee. I was recommended for the committee by the Assistant Vice President for Equity and Diversity, Ricky Hall. Ricky Hall recommended me due to my high level of involvement in and commitment to the Twin Cities community. Through this position, I will be gaining more and more knowledge about the university and its operations, which would only improve my performance on the Board of Regents. I recognize that the Board of Regents is the governing body of the entire University of Minnesota system, and I recognize that importance and the responsibility of a position on the board. I do have some questions about what my individual responsibilities as a regent would be, though, especially tied to being the student representative. But first, I would like to move on to the next part of the interview. What questions do you have for me?
Thank you. I'm going to try to answer your question first. While I'm not going to be prepared to tell you what all the overall responsibilities of the region are other than to do what's good for the state, once you're appointed, you are a regent. The student part will never completely go away, but you are a fully seated regent. And so that's an important distinction in where we are today. And so that's one of our charges is to make, as we interview candidates, is to pick the best what we think are the best people to recommend at the legislature for selection. So, with that, we'll move on to a series of questions. And
Chair?
Yes, Paul.
Drew, you just mentioned that you're one of the two undergraduate student representatives for the Dean of Students search. So first of all, congratulations, and now I'm going to use a metaphor, and I don't want you to take it offensively, but you're now going to be sitting at the grown-ups table. It's a very important responsibility. So how will you see your role with that very important search in representing the undergraduate students?
The undergraduate students comprise 30,000, or I have a population of 30,000 on campus, and so I see myself, there's only two of us. The other undergraduate member is the president of the Undergraduate Student Government, the Minnesota Student Association. And so between the two of us, we really do have, you know, it is our duty to represent 30,000 people, and I just see it as being a very active voice, not being afraid to share my opinion or to ask questions, and just really being straightforward about what the undergraduate population would need in a position. Jerry Reinhart has done a spectacular job in that position, and it would just be really advocating to get someone who can fill his shoes, so to speak.
If I can, for just a minute, highlight a few of the ideal elements of the profile of what you would like to see in Jerry Reinhart's replacement.
Absolutely. I would like to see someone who has extensive experience in a large public university, preferably a research land-grant university. I'd like to see someone who has experience in promoting diversity on campus, someone who has experience in dealing with a diverse range of students. We have a large international population on the Twin Cities campus. We have people from all across the country. There are lots of different populations that operate on the Twin Cities campus. I'd like to see someone who has had experience in crisis management or similar, similar situations to that, as well as someone who just really has that passion for working with students. I've talked to some other members of the search committee who have been on similar things, and they said you can kind of tell, especially when they come for that first round of interviews, whether they're just in it, you know, to have the title, or whether they're really in it because they really like working with the students.
Margaret?
I'll first answer your question about perhaps being the first undergraduate regent. Jessica Phillips, I believe, was 19 when she was selected as a regent. But I would go on to say she was one of the most outstanding regents. And notice I didn't say student regents, regents that I have ever seen work. And she went out and got an MBA during that time. So there is a precedent for an undergraduate coming forth and doing a good job. You're in a unique position as an admissions counselor. And I know your boss, who provided your reference. As they talk to you about the type of student they need to recruit at the University of Minnesota, what are they telling you to focus on that isn't a company secret that you can share with us today?
Absolutely. The university is a very competitive institution. We have top-notch academics across the board. And because of the high level of our academics, we need to make sure that we're recruiting very talented individuals so they can succeed at the university. We found that many times we are unable to, we admit students to graduate. We don't admit them to just to come here and then to find that it won't work for them. And so recruiting leads to commitment, leads to enrollment. And so we recruit students that we believe could really be successful here. And so that includes a good academic record, includes strong leadership, strong extracurricular activities, among other host of factors, but our primary factors are really academic in nature, just because they really need to do well in academics first before they can succeed in other areas.
Follow up. As you have a sound bite that you say to somebody that you've looked at their record, you know who's going to be in your pod that you're talking to, what's your most compelling message that you say about the University of Minnesota when you know they're looking at Michigan and Berkeley and others?
Michigan and Berkeley.
It depends.
It really does. Some students, so for example, I was coming from small town, middle of nowhere in Illinois. I was looking for the Twin Cities. I was looking for the major metropolitan area, and at the same time, I wanted the Big Ten focus. And this is the only place where you can have that. Some students are looking for that research opportunity, and we say, okay, we have the research opportunities, and we have the Twin Cities campus, so you can work for 3M or Cargill or Medtronic or General Mills, all those different companies. Mm-hmm. You know, it depends. Are they looking for an outstanding social sciences? Well, we're ranked third in the nation for social sciences. It all depends on what the student is looking for. So there's not just one general message. I mean, you know, we have our talking points, we have our main messages, but it really depends. We really do have to tailor it to what that student's looking for.
Good answer.
George?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Covey, I don't see a lot of governing board experience, but that's not to be unexpected, I guess, as a student applicant. But can you just give us your definition of the role of a regent as opposed to the president of the university?
Yes. I see president as having his ultimate responsibility to the university system as a whole and to ensuring the growth and the success of the university, whereas the Board of Regents and each individual regent having its ultimate responsibility to the state of Minnesota and how the university is the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Did you have a follow-up?
No.
Oh, okay. Then I'm going to go to Dave.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming today. I appreciate it. I'm just going to ask the open-ended question that we generally ask everybody. Why are you seeking this position? And if you are elected and over the next 6 years serve, what do you intend to do as a regent of the University of Minnesota?
I'm seeking it because I read about it in an email and I said, what's a board of regents? So I looked into it and I said, sounds like a really cool experience. I let undergraduates do this. And I said, well, there's nothing stopping me from at least applying. And so I looked into it more and more, and I just thought this would be a great way. Like I've said before, I'm extremely involved. I'm extremely committed to the community. And I think that I could provide, like I've said, a valuable point of view to the Board of Regents. I think I'd be a valuable member. Can you please repeat the second part of the question for me?
Well, what would you intend to do or accomplish as a regent over the next 6 years?
Absolutely. I think that President Kaler's operational excellence initiative is a great example of the kind of work that needs to be done. The recent articles in the Star Tribune and the Wall Street Journal and his response to them highlight great examples of what is still wrong with the institution as well as what has been, as well as the progress that has been made in the institution. And I think I'm not extremely familiar. I'm not very involved in the administrative processes, but I think that becoming more familiar with them and then working to solve those remaining issues and to keep the progress moving forward would be what I'd be looking to do.
Thank you very much.
Sonia.
University is a huge $3.5 billion organization with a global reach. What personal characteristics or experiences do you bring that will bring you into that setting and allow you to help govern as a regent?
As was said by George, I do not have a lot of governing experience, especially anything near to the size of the entire university system. What I would bring is just a very, very broad knowledge of the university, at least of the Twin Cities campus, which is the central part. And I think that would be my biggest contribution. We would be being able to bring an in-depth and very current knowledge of all the different programs that we offer.
Thank you. Jennifer.
True. I was really excited about you applying, partly because I think it's maybe one of the first times we've seen somebody from the American Indian community who's had a student role, leadership role. And also given you're younger, your age, and 40% of people under the age, what's the exact statistic? We have the most diverse group coming into colleges and coming out of colleges in this country. So given that, given your experience, tell us what you think still has to be done with the university in terms of race equity and serving American Indian students.
Yeah, absolutely. So we found, I mean, in my experience, it's very much just personal biases at this point. You know, there's any kind of institutionalized problems or anything have really been taken care of by the Office of Equity and Diversity, working with it, and then through their many of their sub-offices. But in my experience, I'll go into the Student Cultural Center, where I'm operating support member, and I'll hear one student saying, "Man, this teacher was really racist," and he was comment about powwows or kinds of things. I'm around a lot of other cultural centers as well, and for a lot of them, it's very similar things. Backing away from race and just kind of towards, you know, cultural identity and cultural biases, I'm very familiar with the GLBTA programs office and also any other queer communities on campus as well. There's a lot of work that could be done there with things like gender markers and gender neutral restrooms. But going back again to race and equity, I think it's just really getting out there and promoting this system of awareness and comfort with many different kinds of backgrounds. We found, in my experience, whenever I have discussions with people, it's always that they were simply just didn't know. Yeah, and you know, they thought it's appropriate to ask this question, then really it's not. So it's more about educating, and that's a lot of what we do also with our programming. You know, when we host a powwow, we invite everyone on campus and in the Twin Cities and beyond that to come to us so they can see what it's like, so that way they don't have this idea of us out in a field with a couple of teepees or something. You know, it's much more about educating people so that they know what questions to ask, what questions not to ask.
So I have a follow-up. I'm going to give a real world issue that is structural. There's a fight for immigrant students who were not born in this country but have been raised in this country, so the undocumented immigrant movement and DREAM Act and DACA.
Yes.
Currently, the University of Minnesota has two price levels, right, for out-of-state or in-state.
Yes.
So one would say it's an equity issue that undocumented immigrants raised in Minnesota have to pay out-of-state tuition. You're now a regent, and you have people from a different generation, different backgrounds that you work with. How would you approach that issue? If students came to you and said, "We want to have the same tuition rate, you know, I went to South High and I'm an undocumented student."
Yeah.
And they're asking you to advocate for that. How would you work with somebody at the region level?
I'd definitely bring them in to speak to them. And I would say, what are your needs? You know, and obviously their needs, you know, would most likely be to have that lower tuition rate. I think we need to have a conversation of why the tuition rates are lower. Is it need based, or is it, you know, or is it due to the Minnesota residents having been in the state and supporting them? Other students come to us with needs from other places, and we help them out with scholarships, financial aid, and they do have a responsibility to make sure that they can, you know, they can attend the institution. I know of the issue, but I'm not extremely aware of, you know, I'm not extremely knowledgeable about it, so I don't have all the background information. But I think it would just begin with me becoming more aware of it and speaking with them, what are their needs.
Very thorough.
Lois?
A two-part question, and they're not related. The first one is, you're an undergrad. What are your thoughts looking at a six-year term? What are your thoughts post-completion of your undergrad? As far as your education, your life, your work?
Would you like me to answer that first? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
As far as a six-year term, it definitely is. It's a long term. At the same time, I feel very, very comfortable here in the Twin Cities. I really enjoy it. I like the state in general. I've traveled up north to Duluth before, and I really do like Minnesota, and I'm very confident, and I think that comes through when I talk to prospective students as well, that the Twin Cities has a lot to offer. I'm majoring in journalism, focusing on strategic communication, and I feel very, very confident that there's a place for me here in the Twin Cities to definitely not only survive but thrive here, and so I'm not at all afraid to commit to being in the area.
Second question goes to talking with students all the time and being able to talk about the area. You've had to become quite familiar with the university and with higher education in general in order to to, you know, somewhat react as they're comparing Michigan and Berkeley. So that being the case, talk, if you would, please, about the impact of information technology on higher education, and in particular, direct those comments to the open courseware opportunities that are present, and what you think will come of those opportunities. Will they simply be there? Will they create pressure on institutions like the University of Minnesota? What do you think will happen?
I'm a little bit unclear. Are you speaking of things such as like online lectures?
No, I'm speaking of the massive open online courses, MIT's work, Stanford's work, and John Hopkins, the whole consortia of free, top-notch online courses that are out there.
Absolutely. Excellent question. The online lectures, to me, is a thing by itself, and the free, in-depth work that has become available. And while there's absolutely something to gain from watching those lectures and learning the material at a distance, I think that there's really something that can be gained by attending an institution, being there in person. Whether you're commuting 20 minutes from home or whether you're staying on campus or I live just 2 miles off campus, there's something about being there on campus, interacting with those professors face-to-face, interacting with your advisors, going to the career services, asking them, write on my resume, tell me what's wrong with this. There's something about that being in person experience, even just walking into Morrill Hall or to the Kauffman Union, there's something about being there that really adds to the difference. There aren't other people that are succeeding that are your age. You can say, man, if they just got hired at 3M, I can apply to General Mills and I'll do fine. I think that it's great that people now have access to these, but I do not think at all that it will detract. I think it will only emphasize the benefits of attending a four-year institution, of actually going to those colleges and universities and being there as a student.
Sure.
I'm curious, because I'm familiar with the honors program, mm-hmm. but how did you arrive at choosing the honors program here versus somewhere else in the country?
I didn't really. I was offered admission to the University Honors Program, and I wasn't very aware of it. When I first applied, I was really focused at psychology. I wanted to be a counselor, and I was offered admission to the University Honors Program, and then I started getting information about it. And this was already when I was like, I'm really thinking about Minnesota. And it wasn't until I came to orientation and I started learning more about it, and I heard Dr. Udaw talk. He was the very first person as an enrolled student that I heard talk at my orientation session. It was great. He very much has a passion for learning and for his students, and it was great to hear that at first. And I was like, man, like, I'm really excited to be part of this program. And it was after that, I spoke with my advisor, and I got to learn, I can do research. I'm required to do research. And so I didn't really compare honors programs at that time. But now, looking at it as an admissions perspective, now I become much more aware of, this is what other students are saying about other schools. It's very beneficial to have a university-wide honors program. So, I'm not only an honors student in journalism, but I can take like an honors biology class to see how a scientist looks at problems a little bit differently than I do. There are excellent opportunities for extra classes that students can take. They're doing an excellent one this spring that incorporates research into it. It's about the Great Lakes and the waters that are there. And so this is a course that sophomores, freshmen could take, and you're already doing research. And so those are great benefits of the University Honors Program.
And a follow-up question. Mm-hmm. If you were giving a 30-second elevator speech about the Honors Program, how would you explain it to families?
I do it all the time.
And the clock is running.
Okay.
So the University Honors Program is basically just another enrichment program that the university offers to about the top 10% of its students. Undergraduates who participate have options to enter courses that are specifically designed for honors students, as well as honors sections of regular courses, so challenging you just that extra little bit academically. It also gives a lot to our students as far as help acquiring internships or doing research or studying abroad is also very much encouraged. I found that the question isn't if I'm studying abroad, but rather when am I studying abroad. And I always say, I don't know yet. But it's just an excellent enrichment opportunity that is available to the very most accomplished students.
Thank you.
Jerry?
I might have a follow-up to my question as well. You come from a unique background. Let me congratulate you first on your accomplishments to this point of your undergraduate career, but specifically your Native American background. Tell me a little bit more about your students, your student group, and what do you do? The American Indian Student Center, and who are your audience, and what things do you do specifically within that?
Absolutely. I'd like to begin, first of all, with my recruitment process and how that kind of started, if I may. I was first contacted in the fall of my senior year in high school by the Native American recruitment coordinator. His name was Eric Robertson. Eric called me and he said, "Hey, Drew, have you thought about the U of M?" I said, "No, not really." He said, "Well, the application's free. You should try it out." So I did. And he was the only person, along with Jillian Rowan, who runs the Circle of Indigenous Nations at the university. It was them, too, that really got me interested in the university. I ended up coming and visiting that December, and I just kind of fell in love with campus. But it was through them that I really got to know the university and that I became interested in it. They talked to me. I participated in the American Indian Student Cultural House, which is a living learning community in one of the residence halls. So it was myself and some other American Indian students living on this floor. It was just us. We'd go to meetings every week. We would take trips sometimes on the weekends. And then I got asked, I said, "Hey, Drew, do you want a part-time job?" I said, "Absolutely." So they said, "Well, the Student Cultural Center is hiring." So I started working and working. I found that I was very interested in not only just kind of holding down the fort while board members weren't there, but actually participating, helping to plan these events and attending the board meetings. And because of my involvement, they actually created a position that is now in place for this spring to incorporate a Cultural House member into the Student Cultural Center board. And so it's just trying to get those freshmen really interested in participating later on years. But now that I am treasurer, we host lots of different kinds of events. That's kind of our main thing is events as well as hosting our center. So in our center, we offer free printing to all students. Occasionally, we will host pipe ceremonies. We smudge a lot of times for our students. We host discussions, whether it be about Columbus Day or Thanksgiving or lots of different kinds of holidays. We host two very big events. This year, we did host a fall powwow. We hosted a fall round dance on the St. Paul campus. Every spring, we host a spring powwow with numbers getting up to close to 500 people that attend. Every month, we host what's called the Fry Bread Friday. This is where students, anyone actually from anywhere, can come and we cook them fry bread. And so it's in no way a traditional thing, but we cook them fry bread and they get to have Indian tacos for a night. So that's just something, hey, come and check out the center. Come and enjoy each other's company. November, we host an Honoring American Indian Women Luncheon, where we ask outstanding women from the community to come in and we honor them by giving them Pendleton blankets as well as some other gifts. In the winter, we host what's called Winter Storytelling. This year it's set for February. So where we have members from the community come in and they tell stories to anyone who wants to come. And participation at these events is overwhelmingly very strong in the Twin Cities students, but we definitely do have a lot of community members that come in they're just kind of aware of what we do.
And Mr. Chair, I actually do have a follow-up. As you're probably aware, Minnesota has a significant portion of its population being Native Americans. And I'd like your comments on, do you think the university provides adequate opportunities for them to become students? You told me a little bit about recruiting already. Opportunities for professions, opportunities, business opportunities. Is the university doing an adequate job with specifically that population of people?
I think that we're doing a good job, absolutely. Through my involvement through the Circle of Indigenous Nations, I've actually attended the American Indian Commerce Commerce Association hosts a banquet every fall. I've attended that now for 2 years, and it's great to go there and to hear them saying, we're going to build this new thing, and we want all Native businesses to come and ask us. We, they have a very, very strong sense of community. And I think it's important to recognize that these American Indian students are coming to us. They come from those very strong communities a lot of the time. If they come from, you know, from White Bear, wherever they come from, it's a very, very strong sense of community. And I think that, that the communities that we have on campus, being the cultural center, Circle of Indigenous Nations, some other student groups, are trying to act as an extension of that. I think, however, that there are current issues that are showing students that maybe the university doesn't care that much. For example, the second floor of the Kauffman Memorial Student Union is known as kind of the cultural center floor. It has cultural centers ranging from the Queer Student Cultural Center to Almedina Cultural Center to the Minnesota International Student Association, all sorts of different cultural centers come, you know, and have reserved spaces on that floor. However, a few years ago, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, a couple of students went up and they said, "Hey, how come our student group doesn't get a space on that?" And they responded as well, "Because it's, you know, the commitment has, or the university has a commitment to diversity. That's why those spaces were set aside, you know, to show, you know, that we really do care about these student groups." And but now the process has kind of gone through, and now a lot of the cultural centers are getting moved. Almost everyone's space is getting reduced. And other student groups are coming in and are taking away space from us then, and they have no history there. Whereas we've been there for quite some time. A lot of other student groups have been there for some time, and we're saying, you know, the university says it has a commitment to diversity, but we're not seeing that in action. We're seeing it as some people complain that their student group doesn't have space for, you know, I don't have an example, but, you know, they're complaining that their student group doesn't have an example, but, you know, what happened to us? We just got, you know, kicked to the sides of the floor, basically. So there are definitely issues.
Margaret?
I have a follow-up question to that. So did you knock on Maggie Towell's door and say, "Maggie, I need to talk to you"? And so the question I'm asking you, really, is any time when you see an issue, and they're every day, every hour, every minute, mm-hmm. at the U, absolutely. What have you done to address that? That's number one. And you answering that question was my next question. If you, serving on Jerry Reinhart's search committee, could address one big thing that needs to be done in the student affairs area, what would that be? So first, how have you handled there isn't room at the inn, I'm sorry. And then number two, what would a mega issue be that needs to be addressed?
I have helped I have not been able to serve directly on the committees. It's called the Second Floor Advisory Committee. Is that space? It was a committee that was designed. It has members from all different cultural centers that were on the second floor. They now serve as a committee, and it has met every single semester right when I've had class on Friday mornings. And so I've not been able to attend. However, I have always sat down with our president, who has been attending. And I've had conversation with her. What can we do? Last year, the president always held discussions on Wednesday evenings for anyone else who couldn't make those meetings. So all different people that would use these cultural centers would go. I would always go and try and learn, you know, what's going on. I did not know who Maggie Towles was until actually the first meeting of that search committee. But now I know. Now I know who to go to.
You are a wise man. You've learned something very fast, very important.
So unfortunately, I just met her about 3 weeks.
She's the director of the unions.
She runs it. So I've not done a lot directly. It's been a lot of supporting the students who have been able to serve on those committees. In response to your second question, what is one major issue that I'd focus on in the search? I think that it would be finding a candidate who doesn't have to be recalibrated to what the university is already focused on. You know, the university already has commitments to diversity, to academic excellence. And it's very focused on serving its students. And I think we'd have to find someone that we don't have to recalibrate, that already believes in the same things that we do, that already has that passion. And so we're looking for someone that fits a position. We're not trying to fit the position to them.
Jim.
I, too, have a two-part question. So,
so be warned.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Let me give you the framework of the first one. Given the very real discussions in both the popular and the academic press about the value of a college education, especially given the fact that many students end up with a 4, 5, or 6-digit debt. You strike me as a very thoughtful person. Did you consider, when you were deciding to what to do post-high school in your education, any of the alternatives that Lois has described and that are coming online now, to use that term, as another way of experientially getting yourself educated and doing something other than spending $25,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 in college or in graduate school? How did you go through that process to decide that you wanted to do the traditional way? And then I'll follow up. But tell me how you decided that and why you thought that made sense.
Yeah. This is a favorite of mine, a favorite topic of mine. Why did I pick college? For my entire junior year in high school, I was said I'm not going to college. I'd gotten employed at Jimmy John's, and I loved it. I loved it. And the managers, they said, you know, you're pretty good. Let's have a chat with the owner. And the owner wanted to send me to management school because I told him, I said, I don't really want to go to college, but, you know, can I stay here and work? He said, I'll promote you. Yes, stay here to work. And so I was looking to make a salary. The store was very profitable. So looking to make a salary equivalent to 2 years of tuition, cost of attendance, 2 years cost of attendance. And so I was looking to do pretty well. And I sat there and I was at the store and I said, you know, I really don't like this town. It's a small town. You know, I had the wanderlust. I didn't want to be there. And I said, I don't want to be here. And as at the time, I was kind of planning on, you know, getting hired, working for a couple of years, maybe attending community college, get some business or finance, accounting, you know, classes, in, kind of thing, and then maybe starting my own store or even starting my own restaurant. You know, doing my own business thing.
Don't do it.
I said, thank you. and so I was kind of planning on sticking around for a while and just kind of braving it on my own, and I decided that it wasn't what I wanted to do. I didn't want to slowly work up and just kind of stay in the same place until I hoped to move on. I was really looking for, you know, to go away and to broaden my view of the world. You know, I grew up and lived in the same town of 20,000 all 18 years of my life, and I was like, I don't even know what the West Coast looks like, and I still don't. But it's that kind of a thing. You know, I wanted to broaden my view, and I found that what I could gain in college, and the way that it could help me prepare for careers and give me a better career, I felt would vastly outweigh the debt that I am incurring.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chairman, my follow up would, the context and framework for that is that I have a son in law who is a minister. He and my daughter have 6 children, the oldest of which is 12. They're all, as you would guess, very high achieving people. And you made that decision and that choice 2 years ago. When my 12-year-old granddaughter and the subsequent siblings make a decision 4 years from now or so about how to get themselves educated for the rest of the century, what do you think will go through their mind? Will they, clearly the options for alternative education that we described will be there, and how will the university have to think about that kind of achieving and serving that child or those children, and competing and staying relevant as to the alternative that might not end up with, obviously they can't end up with they'd end up with a lot of debt, I guess.
Yes.
Given the resources that they have for 6 children, so how would you advise them to start thinking about it? How will they be thinking about it?
Absolutely. First, did you say 6 children?
6 children.
I'm 1 of 7. and my parents, you know, when the oldest was growing up, and I'm right in the middle, and they were going, we let him go to college. We have let all 7 of them go to college. What are we going to do? But so far, all 4 of us have chosen it, and I think it's been a great decision for us. It's not for everybody, but I think that that there's definitely something in continuing to improve your education, whether it's through watching, you know, that free material, or whether it's through going to a trade school, whatever it is, You need to make yourself more valuable in that way. One of the very competitive things that a university offers, especially University of Minnesota, is that hands-on approach. So, like I said, you're not interacting when you're sitting there watching the lecture. You're not interacting with the professor. You don't get to talk to your advisors about what people usually do with this major or with this knowledge, even anything like that. And so I think that there's a lot to be gained from going to the university, being able to talk to someone, and then also having experiences to do those internships that are already there, that are already in existing programs, or to do that research. We spend a lot of money on research. We do a lot of research, and it's one of our biggest strengths, and that's a huge benefit for any kind of science, engineering, as well as students can do research in anything, dance, marketing, food and nutrition, anything. And that's a huge benefit of what we have, is that hands-on approach where students can really work on whatever they're passionate about and can get that funding and can get published even before they graduate. Lots of our students do that every single year. And so that's a huge benefit, and that's definitely something that we have to focus on keeping alive.
We're nearing the point of out of time. Joanne has another question.
I actually have a two-part.
Oh, no.
Very quickly.
I would have been disappointed.
You were talking about wanting to leave. And one of the questions that came up, so where is home now? Where is your residency now? Yeah. As a question I'd like you to address. And then the other question following that is, how would you evaluate the performance of a regent and then of yourself individually if you're serving in that regent role?
So home for me, it's a complicated question. It's asking where do I feel like I belong, or where are my bank statements sent? I'm dead serious. I haven't switched my bank statements from TCF from my address in Illinois, but I've been in the state now for a year and a half, and I have no plans on leaving. I simply haven't changed my permanent address because I didn't think I'd be in the same place more than a year. Probably move across the city, something like that. But home for me is definitely Minnesota. I found, and I've talked with a lot of other fellow students of mine. I have a conversation with peers, and I ask, how was first year for you guys? And they said, well, it's weird. After you're there for a month, going home is definitely going like to your room or to your apartment, wherever it is. But it doesn't feel like home yet. You haven't been there long enough. You don't have the same connections. Whereas going back home, whether it's in northern Minnesota or Wisconsin or Illinois, wherever you're from, that isn't really home either, because you felt like you put a lot of time and effort already into being here at college. And so I was in kind of this limbo, but I finally made the point, especially right around when this time last year, I said, I've really made the connections, and I've put the effort forward, and this place I can now call home. And I definitely feel that way now, and I feel like I belong here, and I'm very happy to be here.
Now, how do you evaluate?
Yes. Comparisons. I would say, where are we in comparison to last year? Are we spending more? If so, where did that revenue come from? Are we graduating more? If so, did enrollment go up as well? Or graduating less? What happened with enrollment? I think it would be a matter of comparisons, just to put it generally. I don't have extensive experience with a lot of system which prevents me from providing a very detailed answer, but I think it would just be comparing, what did we set out to do, and did we accomplish that?
Shelley, did you have a question?
Just real quickly, do you have, or what experience do you have in the political world, and do you see a problem with dealing with when you're in a situation where two sides are against each other, and that just doesn't seem like they're coming to a conclusion? How would you deal with that?
This may seem like an oversimplification, but again, I grew up as one of seven children, and it was extraordinary how very polarized it got sometimes. It was great. Loved it. it was that kind of experience that I remember one of my teachers in high school saying, you know, Drew, you're just really flexible. You adapt a lot. And I think it's I grew up having to. And there will always be people who think differently than you. And I think it's just a choice. It's a matter of compromising. And sure, neither of us might not get what we want. But, you know, but what we're getting is close to what is possible. It's very, very important to be fair. I mean, especially when it's $3.4 billion. It's very, very important. But at the same time, the university has goals. The state of Minnesota has goals as well. We need to, you know, we keep everything in mind. As far as experience in the political world, I follow the news fairly well. But no, I do not have any experience with politics.
Dave, you had a...
It's a technical question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. One of the reasons we asked about residency is that the member of the Board of Regents, we believe, has to be a resident of the state of Minnesota. So I'd have to ask, where do you vote? Where do you pay your taxes? Can you answer questions like that?
Yes. So I voted this fall in the state of Minnesota. Okay. I felt like I didn't belong voting in Illinois anymore. As far as taxes, I pay income taxes here. You know, I'm unemployed by the university. I don't own any property or anything like that. So that's where I pay my taxes.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, with that, thank you for answering our questions. I invite you to make a closing statement, and in addition to that, if there's a question that you thought we should have asked, now would be a good time to answer that one as well. And please tell us what the question is.
That's a good one. I was expecting to get more questions about my experience as a tutor, as a research consultant, and what my experience with fellow students has been in that position, what students' needs are academically, if they feel like they're well prepared, are we offering enough support resources, kind of thing. But then again, you know, maybe that might not fit the position. Mm-hmm. As for closing, first of all, thank you very much for having me. This went far better than I was dreaming it to be last night. So thank you very much for being welcoming and for being kind. So thank you. I'm honored to be here. So thank you. And although I'm not the most I'm not likely the most experienced candidate to be interviewed, I feel that I'm well-rounded in the experiences I do have, and I am 100% willing to do what is necessary to be a full, active, and very successful regent. So, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, George.
I have a kind of a question. This is off the record, Mr. Cuddyu, but...
Not really.
No, don't believe him. It's a nightmare.
If you need to ask George, I think we have time to ask.
All right. Well, we do background checks, but you give references, and we check with the references. And one of the questions was, can you give the applicant's greatest weakness as an employee? And somebody answered, as an employee, Mr. Covey, you consistently exceeds expectations. How would you plan to correct that?
I would raise expectations.
Okay. That you can put on the record.
Thank you very much. We'll let you off the hook.
Yeah. And, and